Welcome back to another episode of The Sweet Spot. This is John Sherman from Practical Golf, and as always, I'm joined by
Adam from Adam Young Golf.
I think we got a blockbuster episode on our hands today. I'm going to predict that right now. No pressure to our guests, but we, for a long time, whenever we talk about wedges on this show, we're like, oh, we got to get Joe Mayo on. We got to get Joe Mayo on because Adam's buddies with him. Joe, I don't even think you know this, but I spent time with you in Vegas like 7 years ago with Tommy Armour III, but maybe we'll get into that. But we have Joe Mayo with us. We're going to talk wedges. I'm sure you've heard his name. It was all over like the golf world last year with Victor Hovland going from a crappy wedge player to world class. If you follow him on Instagram, he's putting a ton of cool videos. I miss you, Joe, on Twitter when you were Trackman Maestro, one of the original like ringleaders of golf Twitter. And he unfortunately left us. So, Joe, welcome to the sweet spot.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Of course. Adam, where do we even start with this? Where do you want to start with this?
Well, you know, I always want to jump in straight to things like geometry and numbers and things like that. Okay. That's why I like Joe. He's the same kind of mindset.
The good stuff. Yeah. Well, why don't we give some like background? I mean, Joe, you could talk on like a million different topics.
Give us a little bit about who you are then, Joe, if you want. Give whatever way you want.
You have such an interesting story.
Well, everybody's heard the story before.
Maybe they haven't.
I got out of golf. I left Tennessee in 1997, moved out to Palm Springs, got in the golf business. My first big job, I guess you would say, out in Palm Springs. And I got out of golf in 2000. I was so frustrated with the fact that I wasn't improving, and the people that I was helping, the few people that I was helping wasn't improving, and they were not improving, rather. And, you know, there was no technology. There was no way to measure anything, and it was extremely frustrating for me. And I said, to hell with it. And I sold the bag, balls, putter, wedges, the driver, the whole nine yards. And I just said, I'm done with it. And I left Palm Springs, moved to LA, and started playing poker for a living. And I was playing cards full time through about 2008-ish. My father was diagnosed with cancer in February of 2008. And at this time, I hadn't been around golf in 8 years or so and had no intention of ever looking at another golf ball again. And I don't remember the exact date or time, but we were in a doctor's office for him, one of his appointments, and I was reading some type of a golf publication, Golf Magazine, Golf Digest. Again, don't remember what it was. And I heard about TrackMan. I read about it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the stuff that I've been waiting on. This is the microscope. I went back out to Vegas where I was living and at that time and got a job in retail golf, got back into it, met a doctor who liked me and he believed in my ability. And he said, hey, let's get a TrackMan. I said, sure, let's do it. They're only $25,000. I'll put in $500 and you put in $24,500 and we'll get one. And he was kind enough to get a TrackMan. And I plopped that thing down and I had everybody and their grandmother hit shots on it. And I started seeing geometrical patterns. Things started to make sense to me. And now we could prove and we could measure and we could identify. That was in 2009. And that lit the fuse. I started putting videos on YouTube. Some people saw them. Grant Waite got wind of me through Dana Dahlquist. Dana's one of our colleagues. He's a fantastic instructor out in Southern California. And Grant and I got in touch. We developed a friendship. And one day I just saw an opportunity. I said, Grant, I said, why don't we go into business together? I said, you have the credibility as a player. You have the credibility as an amazing ball hitter. And I said, I'm pretty good with this technology stuff. I'm pretty good with this math stuff. Let's have a partnership. And he said, let's do it. And he took me out to the PGA Tour. And the rest is history. Here we are.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, again, Joe, I don't know if you remember this, but when you were on Twitter, I was going to Vegas 7 or 8 years ago. I just randomly DM'd.
No, I do remember.
Okay, so I DM'd you and you were like kind enough to let me hang out with you all afternoon. And Tommy Armour III was with you and he gave me a putting lesson where he was like screaming at me and telling me my putting stroke was absolute garbage. And it really helped me so much. He's like, you're going short to long. You got to go long to short. And he's like yelling at me. I was so nervous and it was an awesome afternoon. But the thing I learned.
Tommy was very subtle like that.
Oh, it was amazing. Subtle. He was very forward and direct and it genuinely helped me. But I think what was so fascinating was that, like, as you just said, you're a complete outsider to the golf world. Like, you didn't go the PGA route.
No.
You know, now since then, you've worked with some of the best players in the world, and you've had this like crazy following around you. And I'm always interested by people like that. Like another friend of ours, Shaheen Nakhchivani, it's similar. Like he kind of came out of nowhere, and I think he's kind of like a golf swing savant. And I love seeing stories like this where these like less traditional paths in the teaching world. I think it's very cool.
And I say this modestly, I would consider myself to be an outlier. And I think both of you guys would agree. You know, I didn't play college golf. I didn't play the tour, surely didn't play the tour, and didn't go through the PGA route and did not break through by becoming an apprentice with a quote unquote famous teacher. As Frank Sinatra said, I did it my way. Yeah. And I would say that Shaheen's an outlier as well. And, you know, Adam, you and I've talked about this. Oftentimes answers can be found with outliers. And when we see a golf swing, you know, kind of moving the conversation a little bit here, when we see a golf swing that's kind of quote unquote weird, when you look at Victor or you look at Matt Wolf or you look at a golf swing that looks weird, you know, people immediately say, well, you would never teach that. And I say, why? Why wouldn't you teach it? How can you look at a weird golf swing? How can you look at Hideki's pause or you look at Matt's backstroke in transition? World-class ball hitters, elite ball hitters. And in my opinion, when you make the statement, well, I would never teach that, you could be really blinding yourself to answers. And when you make a blanket statement like that, when you box yourself into a corner by saying, well, I'd never teach that, what basis do you have to say that? You guys see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I think
so.
You're in good company with that discussion.
Outliers can be a lot of information.
We've done a whole episode on swing your swing, and you know, there's two sides to that, isn't there? There's the when you should let someone swing their swing, when you should leave it alone. I think some of the best teachers in the world know when to leave something alone. Also, you know, like you said, quirky things can sometimes actually be advantageous or not harmful at all, just a different way of doing it.
Yes, yes. When you're dealing with a 17 handicapper that plays golf once a month, we have a lot more leeway, guys. We do. Yeah. We have some leeway. And we can try some shit. And I'm like, you know, if this doesn't work, come back and see me in a couple of weeks and we'll go down another road. When you're standing on the range at the U.S. Open on Tuesday,
you need answers.
You don't have that leeway. You better be right. You better be right. You better know what the hell you're doing, or you better have a pretty good idea of what you're doing. You know, there's always going to be a gray area. It's kind of like, again, going back to playing poker professionally or playing professional blackjack. We can have a pretty good idea of where we are, and we can have a pretty good idea of how we're going to proceed, but there is always incomplete information. You know, if I'm playing single deck blackjack, right? Single deck blackjack. And let's say I'm playing with five of my friends. There's six of us at a table, right? If four of us get blackjack on the first round of cards, what are the odds of getting blackjack the rest of the hand or the rest of the shoe? Zero. Because all four aces are gone. So if I'm counting cards, or I don't have to be a card counter, if I'm not just brain dead, I know that the chances of me getting blackjack the rest of that deck are zero. The intelligent player will actually stand up away from the table and say, guys, I need to go to the restroom, or guys, I'm going to go get a cocktail, because he doesn't want the dealer to know that he actually realizes that all four aces are out. But it would be very disadvantageous to continue playing because the chance of blackjack are zero. The point I'm making is this. There's incomplete information, but at that time, we also know all four aces are gone. So, translates to golf instruction. It's like teaching a golfer is like playing five or six deck shoe of blackjack. We have an idea of how the hands are going to come out via counting cards, but we don't know with certainty. We don't know with certainty if we give this player that's, and this is fundamentally good information. It's good information, but it might not work.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
The phrase that I always say that I'm kind of attached to is, if I give 100 golfers X bit of information or X intervention, as an instructor, I have that experience to understand that, okay, this has maybe an 80% success rate. And then you can even boil it down into, okay, this has 80% success rate with really good players and only a 40% success rate with higher handicaps. So I think we're constantly going through those kind of algorithms in our brain when we're coaching, right?
I couldn't agree more. And oftentimes I'll hear this. Instructors will get a little bit self-conscious, you know, you'll touch a nerve and they'll always revert to, well, I get results. And my answer is, well, could you have gotten better results? Could you have gotten better? Let's say you improve the player by X percent. Could we have gone 2X? How about 3X? How about 5X? So just saying I get results or I get better, that's not enough in my opinion. Because first of all, you could tell someone something that's ass backwards. You could tell someone that's information is complete bullshit, but they could improve. It happens all the time.
Yeah, especially when someone's starting out, right? It's like going to the gym. The first time you go to the gym, you can do absolutely anything, even if it's rubbish, and you'll still see progression. Similar with a golfer. If you take a brand new golfer, and even if you give them horrible information, they're probably going to improve for that first year or two just because they're playing more, they're learning about the game, they're hitting balls, their coordination is improving. But that didn't mean that information was the best thing for them or helped them. That information could have actually hindered them in that process.
You're absolutely correct. A novice weightlifter, a completely untrained novice, goes into the gym. It doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter what silly exercise he does. He's going to improve at some amount because he's a completely untrained novice by definition. And when you have a completely novice, untrained golfer, you can tell them oftentimes to do ridiculous things and they will improve. Like you just said, just the simple act of getting out and moving their body and striking golf balls can improve them X percent.
So Joe, everyone's dying. We have a lot of people who are very interested in this. I've been following you on Instagram for, I don't go on Instagram much, but I love looking at your stuff. So Adam wants to get into the geometry. I'll talk sub 30 launch and 5,500 spin, and we'll get into all that good stuff. But let's
do it.
Give us the 40,000 foot view of this wedge stuff that's been going on. I know it first kind of started with, I think it's when you first started observing Brian Gay, what he was doing with TrackMan years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's the steep versus shallow, like start us off here.
In the red corner.
Yeah. We've been told by modern wedge people to be more shallow and use the bounce. And now I'm hearing, no, don't do that. Yep, so start us off. Where do we go?
That is a fantastic question. And I'm glad I'm finally getting the chance to answer this. So here is the truth straight from the horse's mouth. It is no secret that when I came onto the scene, if you will, and I say that modestly, let's say I came onto the scene in 2012 when I started working with professional golfers and people started finding out who I was. People came to me for full swing. They heard about D-plane. They heard about face and path and draws and fades and ball speed and TrackMan. Everybody came to me for full swing. That is no secret. Not one person came to me to learn how to chip a golf ball. And I kind of just accepted that. I went down that road. I marketed myself kind of as, you know, I was TrackMan Maestro, like you said. So I marketed myself as a full swing guy and that kind of stuff. And yeah, I was working with Brian Gay, who was, you know, one of the greatest chippers I've ever seen. And you guys have seen the photographs I've posted of him. You know, we were measuring him 10 years ago. That's not an opinion. We've put the photographs out there. And you measure him and I'm watching him. You know, if you watch Brian chip a golf ball, he moves his head a foot in front of the ball. His angle of attack is 10, 12 degrees down. He's launching this thing at 27, 28 degrees, spinning it 9 million RPMs from 15 yards. I'm like, well, that's how you do it. And from down the line, if you watch him, the club head comes out of his right chin or right cheek area. In other words, the club head's very steep. Very steep, guys. I mean, imagine the classic over-the-top guy where the club head goes through the top of their head. You know what I'm talking about, right? You're like, oh my God, that's terrible with a 5-iron. Well, he was doing that chipping golf balls. He was doing that on 30-yard pitch shots. The club head was coming out of the side of his face. And that's what got me to thinking, wow, well, there's nothing shallow going on here. But fast forward that to December of 22, when Victor calls. He admitted himself, you know, he struggles with the
short. He said he sucked. He said he sucked.
Yeah. I suck at chipping. Right. Which he didn't do himself any favors when he said that because the media is going to take that and run with
of
it
course.
Like sharks to the blood. Of course they are. He didn't help himself, but that's neither here nor there. So he comes to see me in January and we're, you know, people don't know that we were doing full swing stuff. They think I was just short game. We were doing full swing originally. I've told this story before. We started short game Tuesday of Riviera, Tuesday of Genesis. He had a photo shoot that Monday in Newport Beach. We started on Tuesday. He literally had it within an hour or two. He had it. And Xander Schauffele was on that same little green, you know, the chipping area at Riviera is down the hill to the left there. Xander was over there hitting bunker shots with us, and it was impressive what he was able to do within an hour or two.
What was he struggling with? Like, what was his pattern that he was using at that point? And then obviously, what did you do to change it?
Fantastic question. So he was measured by John Sinclair out of Dallas. John's a good friend of mine, and I trust John implicitly when it comes to measuring. He uses AMM technology. Victor's angle of attack on these little 15, 20, 30-yard, 40-yard shots was 3 degrees down, 4 degrees down. Spin loft was too low. So that means the ball speed is too hot. The spin rate is not high enough. And he would struggle with flubbing, fatting. Of course he did. So in combination with struggling with hitting it solidly, hitting the ground before the ball, then he was told you're too steep, which we both know that's absolutely not true. So now you have a golfer that cannot hit the ball solidly, repetitively, reliably. That's number one. Number two, your spin loft conditions are not correct, which means the ball speed is too high, the spin rate's not enough. Part C, he was being told that he was too steep, which he wasn't. So now he's trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. And the way to solve that problem was to, he was told, obviously, you got to roll the face open. You cannot have the face looking at the ball at P2, right? You can't have that because that exposes the leading edge and causes you to dig, which we know is absolutely not true. So now you have a kid, once again, he can't hit it solidly, repetitively, reliably, whose spin loft is all jacked up because the angle of attack is too shallow. And then he's being told that he's too steep. And the way to fix that was to cup the wrist and try to roll the face open and get loft on it to expose the bounce. All of it was just a mess.
So his ball's coming out too hot, no spin. Yes. He's hitting the ground early. He's being told he's too shallow. So he's trying to shallow it out, which causes him to hit the ground even more. Yeah. And all this is because we haven't been measured, right? He hasn't been measured properly at this point. Is that right?
Now you're talking. And here's the thing, guys. I showed him a picture of Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, and Brooks Koepka, all at P2. And for the people listening that don't know what P2 is, it's the first part of the backswing where the shaft is parallel to the ground for the first time. I showed him that photograph of those three players, and I said, take a look at their faces. And of course, the club face was all pointed down toward the ball. Of course, their left wrist was in a flattish, flexed appearance. You know what I'm getting at, guys. Nothing was cupped. Nothing was rolled open. The toe was not open. And I said, these are all former number one players in the world, major champions who can chip the eyes out of it. They haven't rolled anything open. They haven't rolled the toe open. They haven't cupped the wrist. And when I showed him that picture, I think it really resonated with him. He was like, wow, okay, that makes sense to me. And then we got into the conversation of, okay, spin loft. And we talked about the bottom vector. And for you guys listening at home, spin loft is just an angle. That's it. It's an angle. And the top of the angle is the dynamic loft, which is the loft you give the ball at impact. It might be the loft on the face. It might not be the loft on the face, but it's the loft you give the ball at impact. That's the top of the angle. The bottom of the angle is angle of attack. And when your angle of attack is only 3 or 4 degrees down, that can be a problem when you're trying to hit the low launching shot that has high spin rate. Now, if you want to hit a high soft pitch shot, now that's a different conversation. But the standard chip shot, that standard PGA Tour chip shot that comes in kind of lowish, spins once or twice and kind of stops dead or trickles to the hole, needs down for multiple reasons that we'll get into here in just a second.
So we've basically had these two camps, right? I mean, if you go back maybe 20 years ago, kind of Pelts era, it was kind of steep, wasn't it? That coaching style was ball back, hands forward. It was kind of steep. And then you had this backlash over the last 10 years against that, where everybody's gone the complete, 180. They want everybody shallow, using lots of bounce. And so you've created these two different camps, and now we're coming back towards the steeper angle of attack now. Or, I mean, you clear this up, Joe. Are you anti-shallow?
Are you no.
He said it here first. That was like the question we got on Twitter. Like, here's a controversial one. Would he say anything bad about a shallow angle of attack? I'm like,
what's funny, guys, is this, is I have been pigeonholed into what I said and what I didn't say, and I haven't said those things. I have never said that Shallow's bad. Never. As a matter of fact, there are times when Shallow is required, in my opinion. It's required. There are times when you want to be shallow. What's the purpose of being shallow, guys? The purpose of being shallow is to take that bottom vector of the spin-loft model and not have it pointed so downward. What's the purpose of that? The purpose of that is to increase the launch angle to point the spin loft higher into the air to launch the ball higher. There are times to do that. I have never said there weren't times to do that, but here's what I will tell you. If we're going to be honest, if we're just going to get down to the nuts and bolts, let's just go ahead and call a spade a spade. My colleagues who disagree with me, which is fine, none of them that I know of have come out on the record and said, after further review, steep can be a great thing. We were wrong that steep is bad. We were wrong that steep causes digging. We were wrong that shaft lean causes digging. We were wrong that shaft lean is a bad thing. My competitors have yet to do that. And I don't know if they will ever do that. In full disclosure, if they have done that, I haven't seen it, so I apologize in advance. But at the end of the day, guys, I have never said that shallow is bad. I have said that steep is not bad either.
I think the better way to phrase it is like, these are options. And correct. So for everyone listening, myself included, who wants to get better at these nippy little annoying wedge shots around the green. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think in the last 5 years, if you've been listening to wedge instruction, you've been told to go the shallow route and expose mm-hmm. the bounce. So let's clear up the de-lofting, steep angle of attack causing digging. Like, I've seen some of your stuff on Instagram and I've seen your explanation, but I'd love for people to hear it. Like, why? Because I've seen you show videos of golfers who, if you just look at the video, they're like, oh, they nipped that really nicely. No divot, looked totally clean. And then you showed the TrackMan numbers and you're like, yeah, that was like 12 down, 25 degree launch. Yeah,
15 degrees
down. And like 6,000 spin. So I'm like, whoa, I didn't think that was possible because, you know, I'm not an expert at this stuff. So explain how that's possible.
Well, here's what I'm going to say to you. First and foremost, the scientific method, right? When you want to form a hypothesis, that's your belief. You have formed a hypothesis and you go out and you test that hypothesis. You test that belief. And if something throws a monkey wrench in your plans, if something doesn't line up, if you're being intellectually honest, you have to throw that hypothesis out and start over. It cannot become a theory. It cannot become a law. Well, there is a hypothesis that steep causes digging. There's a hypothesis that shaft lean causes digging. Guys, I have posted 2.5 million videos on my Instagram that shows that's not true. I have shown PGA Tour players. I have shown amateur golfers. I have shown everybody in between where angles of attack are 10, 12, 15 degrees down. Shaft leans anywhere from 12, 15 to 17 degrees. I have shown people launching the ball at 25 degrees at 12 degrees down off of a putting green. And the putting green wasn't even touched. So the point I'm making is this. If you are an instructor and you are telling people that steep is bad, steep is digging, shaft lean is digging, blah, blah, blah. If you are saying that, how can you go on to my Instagram and see the countless videos that I have posted of people that are extremely steep, extremely down, 90 degree VSP? They're barely touching the ground. How can you look at that and continue this crusade that steep is bad, causes digging, shaft lean is bad? How can you do that if you're being intellectually honest? How can you do that?
They'll just say because it's faked, Joe.
Period.
Well, it's good CGI.
Because AI if you,
or something
if,
like that.
If you use the scientific method, if you use a scientific method and your hypothesis is that steep is digging, shaft lean is digging, but yet you watch Joe Mayo's Instagram, he's got 49 videos in a row disproving that, then you have to throw that hypothesis out the window and start over, Or option B, continue being intellectually dishonest. It's your choice. Now, to answer your question, how is it possible to do that?
Yes, I'd love to hear.
I'm going to give you this crude example that's a fourth grade example. What if you put a ball on a tee, you teed it up 3 inches high, and you put it a mile back in your stance with your sand wedge, and you lean the handle a mile forward, and you just hammered down on top of this thing? Your angle of attack could be 20 degrees down, couldn't it? It could be. And you could launch it out there at 20 degrees, and trackman would say, angle of attack, 20 degrees down. But you didn't touch the ground, did you? Of course you didn't. And you're going to say, well, Joe, the ball's on a tee. And I'm going to say, exactly. That means your golf swing was above the ground. The angle of attack has nothing to do where Earth is sitting. The angle of attack is in relation to that golf ball, not the Earth. The height of the golf swing has nothing to do with the golf ball. It has to do with the Earth. And people have misconstrued the two. If you have a golf ball sitting on a putting green, because I've done this, it's on my Instagram, I've shown it. You can approach that golf ball at 10, 12, 15 down. And listen closely. If the golf swing is high enough above that putting surface, you will miss the ground on the way to the golf ball. And then here comes the impact. Bam, there it is. And as the golf ball is flying away through the air, if you know how to do it, you can keep the golf swing above the ground and get the golf club to exit back away from the putting green rather quickly and rapidly, and the putting green will never know you were there. But yet you gave the golf ball 12, 14, 15 degrees of quote-unquote downness. So again, if you know how to control the height of your golf swing, the height of your chipping stroke, you can hit the golf ball and then get back away from the ground like a thief in the night, and no one will ever know you were
there. Does that have to do with, you know, if you look at videos of all like Luke Donald and all the great chippers and pitchers of all time, like they're moving, like their heads moving up, like through the impact interval?
Absolutely.
And I've had some discussions and help from Andrew Rice, and that was something he was helping me with. It's like, it's such a strange thing, because I think as like a decent iron player, I'm so used to like compressing and dipping into the ball, where it's like that pitching motion, it's like yes, the right shoulder is coming through and your head's raising up with it. And I see the videos of like Luke Donald doing it, Max Homa and all these guys. I'm like, God, I want to do that. Is that how like the club gets down very quickly and then out of there very quickly too?
We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Maui Nui Venison, a mission-based food company bringing the healthiest red meat on the planet directly to your door. My wife and I have been absolutely obsessed with their products the last few months, cooking with their meat and eating their jerky. Also, Maui Nui has a very special operation going on, and it is the only stress-free, 100% wild-harvested red meat on the market. And most importantly, it's seriously delicious and easy to cook. My wife and I have cooked many of their recipes, including meatballs, different loins, and it is delicious. Perhaps my favorite products are their all-natural venison jerky sticks. You get 10 grams of protein and just 55 calories. This is a great snack after a workout, or you can bring it on the course if you're feeling a little hungry, and you'll get a huge kick of protein with very little calories. Perhaps one of the most important things for me is that there's only 1.5% fat in all of their meat. I know I'm getting maximum protein, nutrient-dense calories, and more importantly, it's very low in saturated fat. And that's something that's really important to me in my diet. Because there's such a limited supply of their meat, they open up a few monthly restocks available for purchase. So now for our offer. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com/golf and take advantage of this limited time offer for 20% off your first order. Once again, that's MauiNuiVenison.com/golf. MauiNuiVenison.com/golf. Or use the coupon code GOLF to get 20% off your first order.
That's a great question, and I am glad that we're going to get a chance to answer this. I want everybody to buckle in for this one. Here we go. When you hit a normal golf shot, a driver, a 3-wood, a 5-iron, a 9-iron, full shot, right? Ideally, at impact, we're going to have some amount of rotation. Of course we are. And with good players, we're going to have some amount of backward bend. A right-handed golfer will have, quote-unquote, right-side bend. That means his spine will be tilted some amount to the right. And his chest will be some amount open. And those alignments create a scenario in which the golfer is able to pull the grip of the golf club upward toward him through impact. Think about it. Everybody listening, think about it. If you address a golf ball right now, your chest is bent down toward the ball. If you rotate your chest 30 degrees open and you bend your right shoulder a little bit downward toward the ball, you will notice that your left shoulder now is dramatically more up and back than it was at address. Of course it is. Well, your arm is connected to the shoulder bone is connected to the arm bone, yada, yada, yada. Well, think about this. If your left shoulder is up and back, what do you think you have done to the handle of the golf club? You have clearly pulled the handle upward and inward, and that is a great thing. Now, let's go over to a 12-yard chip shot, gentlemen. We don't have that same right side bend. We don't have that same rotation. We don't have that same left shoulder up and back. So now, here's the trick to the whole thing, or it's one of the huge pieces in my opinion. Because we don't have those same alignments, how are we going to apply the same force profile to the handle to keep the handle from dropping through impact, gentlemen?
Gotta get that head working up, right?
Period. If the golfer stands up, he can get the grip of the golf club to move up because he can't use side bend and rotation. Because side bend and rotation speed the golf club up. It serves no purpose in a 12-yard, 15-yard chip shot. You hit the ball 80 yards. That doesn't do anything for us. So what can we do to put a force on the handle of the club just upward enough to keep the golf club in its entirety from falling through impact? And the way to do it is to stand up. And I can tell you right now, no, there are some great chippers that don't visibly stand up. There are. Of course there are. Remember, there's always outliers. There's always different ways to do it. But one of the things that makes me cringe is when I hear a chipping lesson and the golfer is told to stay in the shot, hit down, stay in the shot. No. If anybody out there has ever gotten a golf lesson from me ever, and I told you to hit down, come see me, I'll give you a refund. Period. Ever is the key word. So the stand-up move is a procedure that allows the golfer to apply a slightly upward force on the handle. And the last thing I'll say, and I'll let you guys comment, everybody listening, I want you to hear this. I get countless messages every day with people saying, Joe, you have saved my short game. Joe, you've changed my short game, blah, blah, blah. But every now and then I'll get one that says, Joe, I'm trying to do this, but I'm sticking the club in the ground. It's not the steepness that causes the stick. It's the procedure that you're using to create steepness. And here's the point of the whole conversation, guys. I want you to think, when you grip a golf club, I want you to look down at the top of the grip, the cap. If the cap of that grip is moving downward through impact, you could be in a world of trouble. That means the whole golf club, the whole length of your, how long is a wedge? 35 inches, guys? Whatever it happens to be, whatever it is. If the grip, the top of the grip, not the bottom of the grip, if the top of the grip is moving downward, that means most likely the entirety of the golf club is moving downward, which means you have gotten closer to the earth, which means you are going to stick this thing in the ground. That's the problem, not the steepness.
This is probably one of the biggest correlations that I see with yippers, is they're just not in it, just not getting those hands to move up and in. And usually, as you said, it's because they're told they need to hit down on it or stay down. Oftentimes you'll see them diving down. When you see the body moving down, it's very hard to get that handle moving up and in. And then, like you said, I mean, the other side of that is I'm aware of this and I actively try and get my hands to work up and in. And as a result, I can have 20 degrees of shaft lean. a steep angle of attack and barely touch the ground. So if you get that those hands to work up and in, it's probably the biggest commonality with all good chippers, right? And the biggest commonality between the steep and the shallow approach, even.
I couldn't agree more with that. And people have heard me say to my students, stay away from the earth. Get away from the earth. And they're like, Joe, what are you talking about? Well, I want everyone to visualize something. I want you to imagine that you're standing over a 15-yard chip right now. You're standing over it. And you make your backstroke. When you start your downstroke, what do you think will happen if your trail knee starts to buckle inward toward the ball? What do you think will happen? Well, if the trail knee starts to buckle inward, kick in toward the ball, that probably serves to drop the right heel. Are we getting too close to the ground now? You bet your ass we are. And I see it oftentimes when those knees start to flex, when that right knee or the trail knee starts to buckle inward, we start getting the golf swing too close to the ground. And then we knife it and we fat it and we chili dip it. And then here comes the instructor. You're too steep. You got to get it shallow. Well, now we don't address the problem, which is the knee buckling, getting the golf swing too close to the ground. So the original problem has been ignored. We now have invented a problem that's not there. And C, we're trying to solve the wrong problem by getting shallow. And now when we do that, we start flattening the VSP, which we're going to talk about in a second. So the golfer still buckles his knee. The golfer still gets too close to the ground because that was never addressed as the root problem to start with. And now he starts trying to get shallow. He starts trying to get the VSP flatter. Adam, I think you'll agree, you have just lit the fuse. And that bomb's going to go off. It's coming.
For our listeners, some of these concepts that get getting thrown around, I like to give analogies, visual ones. So we've got a couple of, well, we've got low point as a concept. We've got vertical swing plane as a concept. We've even got swing radius as a concept. And then we're talking a lot now about arc depth as well. Mm-hmm. So the analogy I'd give people is to imagine a hula hoop. Arc depth is how high or deep that hula hoop is relative to the ground, right? So most...
Not the ball.
Yeah.
Not the ball, the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So what you're talking about, the bad stuff that can happen is when that hula hoop is actually dropping down through impact, whereas all the best players, they have that hula hoop raising up, getting farther away from the ground, as you say, as they're collecting the ball. And then we've got low point position, which is where's the bottom of that hula hoop? Is it in front of the ball? Is it behind it? We've got swing radius, which is the size of the hula hoop, which is actually changing constantly throughout the swing. But you could just think of it as a bigger or smaller hula hoop. And then one of the concepts I'm sure you're going to get into, Joe, is vertical swing plane, which is what I would say is whether that hula hoop is more vertical, like a Ferris wheel, or more horizontal, like a baseball swing or a merry-go-round. So,
yes. Well, full disclosure, if anybody else out there in the short game world was talking about vertical swing plane 6 months ago, 10 months ago, then I apologize. I just, if you were, I didn't know about it. But watching Brian Gay back in 2013 hitting these chip shots, you know, his VSP was in the 80s. And for all of you people listening, VSP means vertical swing plane. And the simple definition is, where is the center of the club head? Where is it going from approximately knee high to impact in the downstroke? Don't look at the shaft. Don't look at the grip. Don't look at the golf club. Don't think about high handle, low handle. It has nothing to do with it. Look at the club head. Put a dot on it and trace it from knee high to impact. That is your vertical swing plane. And Brian Kay's vertical swing plane was almost 90. Tell me what's shallow about that.
It's almost like a Ferris wheel.
One of the greatest chippers that has ever laced him up. He can roll out of bed and chip the ball. Just chip the eyes out of it. And it's not an accident. And we hear, well, he's got great hands. He's got this. I'm like, well, yeah, of course. He's a PGA Tour player. Of course he does. But he also has great alignments. There's great geometry. And I have made this statement before that chipping is not a contest of physical ability. It's a contest of quality of technique. An 85-year-old woman can chip a golf ball. She can't run a 4-4-40. She can't climb Mount Everest. She can't jump 40 inches off the ground, but she can chip a golf ball. This is a contest of quality of technique.
So, Joe, what would you say is the advantage of a steeper vertical swing plane as opposed to a shallower?
Fantastic question. First and foremost, let's all visualize an airplane landing on the runway at very vertical, straight down. We can see clearly how if a golf club is coming in at a 90-degree swing plane, our chances of getting away from the ground have heightened. The chances of medium, i.e. sand, mud, dirt, grass, whatever, the chances of medium getting between club and ball have been reduced. The chances of getting the ball cleaner have gone up. The second thing that allows us, which, you know something, Adam, it's not really that big of a deal in little small chips, but I want everyone to think about this. If you know D-plane, if you know TrackMan, you know that if the ball is sitting on the ground, the golf club is approaching the ball in the downswing. It's moving out some amount and it's moving down some amount. Or we could say it's moving down and it's moving out. And that's why if you have a 5-iron sitting on the ground and you hit a normal shot, let's say your angle of attack is 5 degrees down, you're going to have a swing path a little bit to the right of that if you're aimed at the target, down and out. Adam, if we have a 90-degree VSP, which I know you know this, there is no out. There's no out anymore. It's all down. Which means if we're trying to hit a ball dead straight, let's say 30 yards, 40 yards, 50 yards, we can hit this thing dead at the hole because we don't have to worry about the out part. Because when the VSP goes to 90, there is no out. Is that a huge concern in my opinion? No, it's not. People ask me all the time, Joe, what was his swing path on that 13-yard chip? And my response is, don't know, don't care. Because face and path don't really matter to me on a 12-yard chip shot. They really, now, if your swing path is plus 10 or your face is negative 5, yeah, but if you have any golfing talent of any kind, it's not that big of a deal. The other one is a moneymaker, in my opinion. Because the VSP is now 90, we don't lose any of our work. We don't lose any of our effort to the out part. So, guys, I want everybody to listen to me right now. If your VSP is 45 degrees, like it is with a driver, for every degree of down, you'll have a corresponding 1 degree of outness. They're equal. 45, 45, 90 triangle. It's equal. Down and out are equal. As the swing plane gets more vertical, as it goes to 50 degrees, 55, 60, 70, 80, 90, we start losing the out and we get more of the down. So when the VSP is 90, we can easily get that 10 down, 12 down, 14, whatever, however down you want to be, you can get it more easily because your work, your effort is not being lost to some amount of outness. Does that make sense, everybody?
Oh, yeah. We've done an episode actually on club path. I mean, this type of content is obviously very in-depth, so people could probably listen to it 20 times and still not get it fully. But yeah, we've done an episode on it using the analogy of Ferris wheels and whether they're tilted and things like that to explain path. And so you're saying one of the big benefits is more of like a contact issue thing.
Yes.
Reducing the debris trapped between the club and the face, sorry, the ball and the face through impact, and then obviously the club gets up and away from the ground quicker on the exit after the ball contact.
Well said. And all of us listening to this, we all know that friction is a huge part of this. We've all heard friction, 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 which is true. You got to have friction. In my opinion, the 90 degree, or not 90, but the steeper VSPs, the 82, the 84, the 85 VSP, it increases the probability of a high friction situation. It gives me a greater opportunity for a high friction situation. And I am firm on that. And you guys have known me for a long time. I'm just not going to go out there and start running my mouth and spouting off a bunch of bullshit unless I run it by people that I respect. I ran this by Paul Wood. I ran this by Marty Jurtson at Ping, Eric Henderson at Ping. I ran this by Sasha McKenzie. I'm like, guys, am I completely off here? Am I just wrong? And they all were like, Joe, you're on firm ground here. You're on firm ground. And if we do a simple, gross example, let's do one swing with a 90-degree VSP. Let's do one swing with a 0-degree VSP. Right? Zero is the club moving along the ground. Well, you can't possibly hit the ball first. The club is touching the ground by definition. That's a gross example, but it is what it is.
Based on my understanding, is that the steeper descent gives you a better opportunity to make clean impact with the golf ball, as you say, friction. Whereas, you know, someone like me is probably coming in a little more shallow than the grass, other stuff gets trapped between the golf ball and the face, and you just can't spin it as much because that's not how spin works. So,
bada bing.
I love everything you're saying. It's interesting to me. But the part that is the most interesting to me is, well, how do you communicate this to Victor? And even better, how do you communicate this to the 15 handicap? Because Victor, obviously, like, you know, the retort to you is, well, PGA Tour players, like, you can tell them anything and they can adjust because they've got eye-hand coordination and control of the golf club that most people don't.
And John, that's not true, because I've had multiple PGA Tour players contact me behind the scenes that you don't know about. I had a PGA Tour player contact me a month ago, and I'm not going to tell you who it is because that's not what we're going to do here. He said to me, I chip it so badly that it affects me. It affects my marriage. Because it affects me as a person. He says, I'm so sick of this. The stress that I deal with, the anxiety that I deal with, it affects me at home. I get these messages. Do you know I have players contact me and they'll say, please don't tell my instructor I'm talking to you? 100%. Brother, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that people don't know about. I've had countless players contact me and they'll say things, Joe, I know it's right. I know it's right. I've experimented with it. I know it's right. But I'm not going to reveal their names because, again, that's not what we're here to do. But trust me, people are beginning to see this.
We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
Now, let's say like someone comes to you and they said, Joe, I want to learn this. I'm struggling, me included. Mm-hmm. How do we start? It's always the communication part, because, like, for example, that move of, you know, the rotation through impact and rising up with your kind of chest and head. I'm doing the opposite right now. Like, I'm compressing and my hands are coming up at the same time. So I'm like thinning a lot of shots. So I'm working on that like rotation and coming up. I'm still struggling with it. I'm still working on it. So I'm just curious, like, when someone comes to your lesson tee and says, I want to chip better, like, help me. Like, what are some of the messages and words that you're saying to them that resonate and get the desired action that you're looking for? Because they can't always be the same, right?
No, of course not. But what's the first thing I'm going to do, John? You already know the first thing.
You're going to measure what they're currently doing?
Period. There's going to be measuring. We're not just going to stand there and eyeball it. We're not going to do that. There's going to be a measuring device. I'm going to know what you're doing. I'm going to find out what you're doing via a $26,000 piece of equipment sitting behind you. And I'm going to put a camera on you. And I'm going to move around from different angles. And then based upon what the measurements tell me, and guys, I want to also make something perfectly clear. Listen closely to this. I have yet to have anyone, the keyword is anyone, come to me who's a bad chipper, whose angle of attack is double digits down. Haven't seen it yet. Now, he might be out there like Bigfoot. He's out there somewhere in the woods roaming around.
He's with the Loch Ness Monster.
He's out there. He is. But I hadn't seen him yet. But I've had PGA Tour players, I've had PGA Tour winners come to me whose angle of attack, I've had 1 degree down, 2 degree down, 3 degree down, hitting the ground behind the ball, flubbing it. PGA Tour winners. An hour later, they're 12 down. They're hitting the ground after the ball. And when you can take a world-class player, guys, listen to this, because this correlates to the Victor Hovland question that you asked 3 minutes ago that I didn't answer completely enough. When you can take a world-class player, a tour player, and you can give them a technique such that they can strike the ball solidly, repetitively, time and time again, now they can judge ball speed. Now they can predict what the ball is going to do before they hit it. And as I've said before, the top vector of spin loft, that's easy. Any of us can control the top vector. We can all close the club face down and bring that vector down. We can all roll the face open and point that vector up in there. We can all do that.
Or use a different club.
Period. Lean the shaft forward, lean the shaft back. That's easy. Controlling the bottom vector, that's the moneymaker. That's the moneymaker. That's where it's won and lost in the short game, in my opinion. And then obviously controlling the height of the golf swing. But again, getting off slightly on a tangent here, If you are telling people that steep is bad, Schaffling is wrong, it causes digging, and you look on my channel right now and you see John Rahm chipping them where the ball is taking off an inch above the ground, spinning like a top, and you see Xander at 10 and 12 down, and you see Victor at 10 and 12 down, and you see Sam Stevens at 14 down, and you see all of these amateur golfers that are 10, 12, 14 down, leaning the daylights out of the shaft, hitting these wonderful chips. If you continue to tell people that steep is bad, causes digging, shaffling is bad, if you're doing that, then you are not being intellectually honest. And repeating what I said earlier, and I'm glad I'm able to say it, I have never said shallow is bad. I've never said shallow cannot work. As a matter of fact, there are times when I demand shallowness. It has to be there. I have said that steep also is not bad.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's where we are as well. We're fighting the steep is okay. is more than okay. There are actually benefits to it over shallow. Just as sometimes there are benefits to shallow over steep as well. So it's a situation dependent thing. Let's talk about what the benefits of steeper are, because there are actually quite a few, aren't there?
There are. And what everybody needs to understand is when we say steep or shallow, we're talking angle of attack. And angle of attack is measured at impact. Angle of attack is not measured 2 inches behind the ball. It's not measured 2 inches in front of the ball. It's measured at contact. So if we take a robot, let's take Ping Man, and let's program him to where he's swinging a wedge that would produce a 20-yard shot. And let's say we've got him on a mat where the club is barely brushing the mat, right? Just barely brushing it. Is he steep or shallow?
How would you know? You don't know.
The answer is you don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know. I want everybody to hear that again. Listen closely, guys. If I have a robot, a perfect robot, no human error, and he is just brushing the mat, you don't know if he's steep or shallow. That's the first thing that people have to get past when they see these players nip the ball off the ground. Oh my God, he came in so nice and shallow. And I'm like, you don't know
I
that.
I think that's the real,
you can't,
if there's a light bulb thing, for me at least, that's it, where it's like, you don't know that.
Yes.
It's the difference between angle of attack and arc depth. And people
Thank you, because guys, let's go back to the robot. Everybody listening is going to love this one. Let's go back to the robot. We've got Ping Man set up, right? And he is barely brushing the grass or the mat, your choice. Now we introduce a golf ball. And let's say, just to keep it simple, we're not going to get this too technical. We're not going to split hairs. This is just broad spectrum. We slip a golf ball in there right at the moment of impact, right at the moment of the brushing of the mat. And let's say that's an angle of attack of zero. Let's just say that. Okay, guys? Now, the next swing, let's move the golf ball back a half an inch, Adam. You feel me? He's still going to brush the mat. And because he's a robot, he's not going to lower his swing or raise up his swing. His swing's it's never going to change. He's a robot. What's angle of attack going to be, Adam? Is it going to be zero?
Steeper.
Damn steeper. The next swing, let's creep it back an extra eighth of an inch. Now it is dramatically steeper, and the robot never moved, his golf swing never changed, and he is still brushing the mat. He's still brushing the mat. Now, if we continue to move the golf swing, continue to move the golf ball backwards, eventually, Adam, he'll blade one, he'll top one, and eventually he'll whiff one. But he never changed his golf swing. The golf ball in relationship to his golf swing changed. So think about this, Adam. Now let's talk about height of golf swing. Let's say that we have the robot brushing the mat gently, and let's say we move the golf ball backwards 2 inches, and let's say that he's spinning it. What would we have to do to the robot to keep the golf ball 2 inches back, to keep the same steepness, but hit it on that second and third groove? What would we have to do, Adam?
We're going to have to drop the robot deeper.
Thank you.
Or lower to the ground.
Thank you. Yeah. So if we lower the robot just a touch, just a little bit, he'll clip it on the second, third groove. His angle of attack could be 10, 12, 15 down. The ball is flying through the air, and he's no longer brushing the mat. He might be popping the mat just a little. And if he's on grass, he'll have just a little divot. Just a little divot. But now he's 15 down. That's what everybody has to understand. When you see Cam Smith nip one off the turf, you do not know if he is deep or shallow. When you watch Jordan Spieth hit one low and the divot is a foot long, it's like a squirrel flying through the air. People think he's steep. You can't know that. You cannot know that. He could have caught the golf ball just right at the low point, and then the ball flies away because, Adam, let's don't forget, and John, I know you know this, there's deflection. When we strike the golf ball goes up, golf club goes down. So we could get divot, we could get quote-unquote ground interaction that had absolutely nothing to do with arc height or angle of attack. It was just
also,
simple
couldn't
deflection.
It be the style of turf they're hitting off of as well?
100% agree.
You don't know this, Joe, but I was next to you on the range in Memphis with Victor. I wasn't gonna stop you and say, "Hey, remember me? You bought Tommy Armour III to scream at me 7 years ago." But in that same tournament, I was watching Spieth on the practice green in Bermuda there, and he was just like hitting these low nippers, but like just tearing the living daylights out of the turf. And I was just sitting there watching.
Of course.
"Oh my God." I'm like, how do I do this?
Who's pitched in more than that guy in the last 10 years? Nobody. And here's the thing. And these are some of the comments that I've heard from other instructors. And I'm not calling any names because, again, I want everybody to hear this. I'm going to shout this from the mountaintop. Everybody hear this. This little crusade campaign, whatever you want to call it, that I've been on the last 10 months to a year with this short game stuff, it was never to prove anybody wrong. It was never to discredit anybody. It was to tell you there are other options. It was to tell you that steep is not bad. Don't be afraid of it. Rather, embrace it, understand the math, understand spin loft, and use it to your advantage. It was never about who's wrong. It's about this is right, too.
So I still want my answer, Joe. I didn't get it. The question
I
want to know what you were saying to Victor or someone else who comes to the lesson team. Because again, understanding this conceptually is one thing. I know that's part of the way to get the desired movement you want. But what are some of the methods? Mm-hmm. Again, because people listening to this, they're going to want to like, oh, how do I try this? Like, what am I thinking about? Like, my head's moving. Because one thing that I saw you say was like, the head is moving towards the target on the takeaway, which is interesting when you think about it because everything in your golf swing wants you to come off the ball. But you're saying, no, these great pitchers, you see their head moving towards the target. So that allows them to get down on it more. And I'm watching their heads rise. I'm like, how are they, you know, what's their cue? What are they, because everyone's got to have a cue, right? Like something they can hang their hat on, an intention. And I'm wondering, what are some of the intentions you've given players to get these numbers where you want?
Brother, I think intention can be one of the most valuable pieces of golf instruction. Intentions. Like Adam. Adam is great with his idea of change where they strike it on the face.
Exactly.
Change their intention.
We love that stuff.
Make them hit it on the toe. Tell them, hit it on the toe on purpose. Hit it on the heel on purpose. Right. So to answer your question, and I apologize that I didn't earlier.
That's okay. I was just giving you a hard time.
John wants technical cues, I think is what you're after, aren't you, John? He wants to go out and try it tomorrow.
Not even technical. When I say intention, I'm actually not asking for like a ton of movement stuff. It's like try and hit the ground over there or like get your weight over, stuff like that.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. First and foremost, as I've already said before, I haven't had one person come to me right now that when I hooked them up on TrackMan, they were 10 down and couldn't chip it. I hadn't seen it. Now, tomorrow, I might get that guy. I haven't had it yet. That doesn't mean he's not there. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to explain what the down gives us. We're going to have the same conversation that we had with Adam 10 minutes ago. I'm going to explain why we want to be down. I'm going to explain what down gives us. And then I'm going to show the golfer how to get the down. And the way that I like to do that is this, because remember, guys, if you tell someone to be steep and hit down, what are they most likely going to do? They're going to pull the grip downward through impact and they're going to flex their knees.
That's the thing that scares me about it.
When you do that, it's game over. You might as well go play tennis or do something else because golf ain't going to work. And you're going to say, damn, that Joe Mayo, that asshole told me to be steep. So I'm going to teach you how to produce down. Now, here's the answer to that. Down is produced by two things, John. The shaft lean helps the down, and the center of mass of the club falling helps produce down. Now, I know that's a technical answer, but I want you to consider that a shaft, I want you to imagine you're addressing a wedge and you don't move your body at all. The only thing you do is you hinge your right wrist backwards. That's all. You don't pivot. You don't turn. Just hinge your right wrist backwards. Now, you're going to move that golf club around you like a clock, right? You are. Okay. If you now relax your right wrist and you allow that club to start rotating back to the ball, it has a downward travel, doesn't it? Common sense. Two things are happening. The shaft went from leaning some amount to falling down toward the ball. So shaft lean helps angle of attack. It doesn't create it all, but it helps it. The center of mass of that club is also falling. Now, for those astute listeners, they're going to say, but Joe, the center of mass is always falling. And I will say, not so fast. Watch John Rahm hit a driver. And John's a buddy of mine. John, if you're listening, a shout out to you. John has always been so kind to me. During the Ryder Cup, I mean, he came up and hugged me. I mean, John has always been so good to me. So, and he has really been very forthcoming when he lets me film him. He's always been open and let me do that. So I appreciate John Rahm for that. If you watch John Rahm hit a driver, he has considerable shaft lean. Now, what did I tell you that shaft lean helps us do? It helps us create downness. It does. But John's angle of attack with a driver is two up. What does that tell you, guys? It tells you that his center of mass is moving upward enough such that it counteracts and offsets the lean of the shaft and gives him a net positive angle of attack. So the center of mass might be falling. It might be rising. It might be zero. But if we want to get these 10 downs and these 12 downs and these 15 downs, if that's what you're trying to get, then we need the shaft lean to help us and we need the center of mass falling. Now, if we pull the handle downward, John, if that grip is falling through impact, as I've already told you, that golf club has gotten too close to the ground. In other words, the geometrical alignments that we established at address have been completely just thrown out the window. Can we agree?
Sure.
That would be like, that would be like Ping Man. He makes a swing and we just lower him down to the ground in his downswing. That's going to be disastrous. So the way I'm going to teach you to get the down is I'm going to address the ground, no ball. And I'm going to move your spine. I'm going to tilt your spine slightly forward. I don't want any right side bend. That serves no purpose in this discussion, none. I'm going to tilt your spine from your belly button to your head, your nose. I'm going to tilt you slightly ahead of the golf ball. You're going to immediately say, I feel steep. You're going to say, Joe, my right shoulder feels higher than my left shoulder. And I'm going to say, wonderful.
So, what you were describing with Rahm, his angle of attack is positive because he's got his shoulders are pointing to the sky as he, and
bingo.
That's what we talk about that all the time.
And tremendous rotation.
With driver, like you want to be hit up on it and you got to have the shoulders tilted that way. So it's the exact opposite of that is what you're describing.
100%. And like I said, he's got shaft lean. That's clear to see. But he hits up on it because the center of mass is moving up enough to counteract the shaft lean. So to get back, I'm going to teach you how to get some down. So we're going to tilt your spine forward just a little bit. I'm going to have your pressure, say 60-40 left, just a little bit. And I'm going to have you make a backstroke where you take the club back to, say P2, P2 and a half. And I'm going to tell you to drop the golf club. Let the center of mass fall to the earth. No pull of the handle. None. No downswing pivot of your body. I want you to simply focus on feeling the center of mass, or for you listeners, feel the club head free falling to the earth. Free falling. You're going to feel steep. Some people say, oh God, I feel like I'm going to knife the ground. I'm like, I don't really care right now. You're just learning to produce downness. And it might be 2 minutes, it might be 5 minutes, it might be 10 minutes. But once you keep that spine tilted slightly to the target, once you keep the pressure slightly forward, and once you allow the head to continue falling, 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 see, think about this, John. If you allow the head to fall, you are not doing two things. You are not hampering the shaft going from a leaning condition to a lining up condition. In other words, you're allowing the shaft to rotate. The second thing that you're not doing is you're not stopping the center of mass from falling. Make sense?
I believe so, yes. It's clearing it up.
Just imagine like a pendulum. It goes up and it swings down.
I know by letting go, you're just letting like kind of gravity and everything do its work.
Period. Now, here's the thing. Here's where we get into trouble, John. When golfers keep the right wrist held backwards, and there are some great chippers that do that. They've learned how to do it. But if you keep those wrists locked and you keep the right wrist bent back for a right-handed golfer, do you see how that could stop the shaft from rotating? Because the right wrist is locked backwards.
You're describing what I do.
Yeah. Oh, here's a better one. How about this, John? How about we keep the right wrist locked backwards and we feel like the handle goes toward the target? So now here's what you've done. When you lock the right wrist backwards like that, you have stopped or you have hampered the shaft's ability to line up. You've stopped that rotation of the shaft. The second thing that you've done is now you've made the tool shorter. Because when the right wrist gets locked backward and the handle leans forward, now the radius from you to the ball has shortened.
This is why hinge and hold doesn't work.
There you go.
If you do it really.
It's almost like that release. So I hate to make this personal, but this is the only way I can understand it. Like for me to hit good iron shots, I love to like lock my hands forward and just feel like I'm rotating because I'm a shaft leaner and that works for me. But I cannot generate that sensation of letting like the right hand pass at impact with the wedges. And that's where I kind of get screwed up. It's almost like I'm trying to do two different things. And that's what I feel like you're describing is that release of that angle of that trail wrist rather than holding it in position.
I want to make sure that we nip something in the bud here. I'm not talking about the throw where the right wrist throws because remember, because if we're hitting this tour caliber chip or pitch, the dynamic loft could be 43, 45, 46 degrees on a 60 degree wedge, brother. That's a lot of shaft lean.
Ton of shaft lean.
So what I'm saying is this. The right wrist is not locking backwards, but it's also not throwing because we still want double-digit shaft lean at the moment of impact.
So is it the rotation of your body that's more of the engine of that and bringing it along?
I would say that's an accurate way of looking at it. But at the end of the day, if we lock the right wrist back, now there are some people that know how to lock the right wrist backwards and hold that angle. And Adam, they know how to lower themselves down.
Yeah, I'm one of those.
And they're good at it. Yeah. If everybody listening, listen to what I said again. If you take a golf club in your hands and you pull your right wrist back, obviously you have rotated the club head away from the ground. If you keep those alignments, the golf club is now quote unquote shorter. The distance to the ball has changed. So now you're going to have to lower that golf club down to the ground. And there are some people that know how to do that effectively. Some people don't. The second problem is when we shove the handle toward the target, right? That upward force that we just talked about now is either gone, non-existent, or has diminished. That's another major potential problem. So for people that can't get the down, you're like, Joe, I just can't get the down. It's usually in one of two places, John. They usually lock that wrist back, which doesn't allow the center of mass to fall. It doesn't allow the shaft to align itself through time and space, or Adam, you know the second problem. I'll walk around behind them, and what's the first thing I see? The VSP is too shallow. And now, guys, let's go back to the VSP. Remember, that's not the angle of attack. It's just the quote-unquote plane that the club head is moving on from knee-high to impact. And when I see someone that can't get down, they just can't get it. John, 99 times out of 100, that deadgum VSP is too flat. The club is, guys, I see people. The club is quote unquote X-ing under the hands from down the line, John. I know you know what I'm talking about. Remember what I said, Brian Gay's club is up in his right cheek. Victor's club head is up in the side of his head. These great chippers have that club head. Not all. But many of these great chippers that I've measured that have these VSPs in the 80s. That club is well up above and outside of the hands.
Because it could be stuck behind them is the opposite.
There you go. So remember, John, let's say your VSP starts to flatten. Now you're going to get some down, but you're going to get some what?
out.
Some out. You're going to get some out. We don't want out. The out, guys, is wasted. The out serves no good purpose. We want the down because, remember, we're just trying to control spin loft here. We're not trying to control draws and fades because the ball's flying 12 yards through the air. So face path is not that big of a deal. And if you have any golfing talent of any kind, your face and path are not going to be really screwy to start with on a 12-yard chip shot, right? So at the end of the day, if we can keep that VSP steep, we can get all the down that we need and all the down that we want, and we won't lose it to the out component. There you go. That's how I'm going to give you the down. That's how I'm going to do it for you.
These are kind of backswing conditions that you're setting up for the next part, right? So that's why you see Hovland kind of move his head down and forwards as he's swinging back, right?
That's 100% correct.
So basically, if we're thinking in terms of like a hula hoop, that down component of the head motion and body motion, center mass motion, that's dropping the hula hoop deeper into the ground. The left yes. side bend component is shifting that hula hoop forwards to the point that if you were to just stay there, you'd probably hit a very deep divot that starts maybe a little bit behind the ball, right?
100%. And that brings us now to us another topic that everybody wants to know about. Joe, why do you have people moving toward the target in the backswing? Why don't you just put the ball back to start with? And that is a wonderful question. And I would like to preface it with, there are some wonderful chippers who do that. There are some wonderful chippers who just have the ball back. Not everybody moves forward. But the reason that I like some players to move forward is this. John, if I move my head slightly down and forward, what does that tend to do to the tilt of my spine and my shoulders? Again, if I'm...
You're going to get that forward tilt you want.
What does that do to the VSP, guys, in your opinion? Would it help steepen it or flatten it?
So you're saying that the path of least resistance for the golf club is to go up rather than behind?
No. I'm not saying the path of least resistance. I'm saying that that is just intuitively where golfers tend to take it.
Okay.
I had a lesson that I just posted 2 days ago on my Instagram. I had a golfer whose first chip was 1.7 down. 12 minutes later, he was 10 down because I changed the way his spine tilted. Because guys, think of this. Listen closely. This is pretty technical shit here. You'll like it. If we're standing at a dress, and let's just say the shoulders are level, the hips are level, everything's level, right? Everything's level. And we just move the ball way back by our right foot and we lean the handle forward. Do you see how if we start the backstroke from that static position of quote-unquote levelness, do you see how it'd be very easy to kind of get the club head working inside quickly, kind of rolling inside maybe, get the club head kind of flattened out because the ball is so far back? We just, in other words, we would turn a little bit levelish. The golf club would kind of get in a little bit. Okay, that's number one. So to counter that, if I have you move slightly down and forward with your head, just slightly now, that increases the probability of the head moving up in early backstroke. I've seen it time and time and time and time again. I don't even have to tell them to steepen the VSP. I'm not going to tell a student that's never seen me before, I want you to steepen your VSP. That would be silly. He's going to be like, what are you talking about? But if I tilt his spine forward and have him move his head an inch or two forward in the backstroke, guys, the VSP magically steepens every single time. Now, the second thing is this, John. Your arms, John, probably weigh 35 to 40 pounds, your arms together. Call it 35 pounds, your two arms combined. If you stand here in a normal stance, level shoulders, level hips, no tilt of any kind, if you take those 35 pounds of arms and you swing them over to the trail side of your body with the golf club, now they have mass, they have momentum. Do you see how if we don't offset that with a little leftward to the target tilt,
you're going to get dragged down.
We could drag ourselves to the right. I'm not saying that we wouldn't. I'm saying that we could.
Got it. So the exact opposite of what you want is occurring because of weight.
Dead opposite. Now, what great players have learned to do, and for you other instructors and golf nerds, you'll like this one. Put somebody on a pressure plate. Put them on 3D pressure plates. Have them line up with ball in the middle of their stance, no tilt to the spine, level hips, level shoulders, yada, yada, yada. And have them make a backstroke and tell them, don't tilt to the left. What you will see is, and Adam, I know you know this, you'll see a strong ground reaction force out of that trail foot. They're actually pushing to not tilt to the right. What they're doing is they're using their feet, and they don't even realize they're doing it. Thus, why I want you to do it on a pressure plate. You will see the pressure start to develop under the trail foot in an effort to stabilize the system so they won't tilt over their right leg. That's one way to do it. If you want to use your feet and you want to use ground force to not tilt behind the ball, that's fine with me. For some players, I'll have them actively move to the left. So for everybody out there saying, Joe, why don't you just move the ball back at address? I would say, first of all, some players can do that and are good at it. Number two, if I have you tilt slightly to the left for the right-handed golfer, it helps get the club head up quickly. It helps steepen that VSP. It reduces the probability of the head getting low and behind you. And number three, it actively helps us offset those 30, 40 pounds of arms that are being moved to the trail side of the body. But guys, there's one more, and it's a good one. If I am loading left on, say, a 30, 40-yard pitch shot, right? I'm tilting slightly to the left. Adam, am I using plyometrics possibly?
I guess so, yeah.
Yes, I am. What's the definition of a plyometric exercise? It is a muscle reverse contraction that requires an eccentric contraction before the concentric. So if I'm tilting to the left, am I loading my lead quad?
Ready to spring up.
There you go. So guys, if I do that, I can load that left knee, left foot, left quad, whatever you want to say. We're not trying to get technical here, but I can load that left post. And therefore, in the downstroke, now I can kind of pop up, can't I? I've got something to rebound off of where then I can stand up a la Scottie Scheffler. I can put the upward force on the handle and get that golf club back away from the earth rapidly, like I said, like a thief in the night, and no one ever knows it was there. And just as an asterisk, I remember showing Victor Scottie Scheffler. He clearly stands up in his chipping motion. I mean, it's as plain as day. Now, I don't know. I've never spoken to Scotty about it. I've talked to Ted Scott a little bit. I love Ted to death. We've chatted about it. I've never talked to Scotty at all. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't think Scott even thinks about standing up. I don't think he does. But that's why he is so brilliant, in my opinion, with his chipping motion, because of that beautiful stand-up move. I absolutely love it. So, John, there's four reasons right there that I like to see a little bit of a target or tilt on these little shots.
Again, this is not my expertise, but
mine either.
Where does, well, I think you know a little bit more about it than
mine
I do.
Either.
When you're working with the common golfer, we'll call them, where does like the rotation, because you know, a lot of people like stall out at impact or they don't rotate enough. Does rotation enter the conversation much when you're going over this stuff?
Two ways to answer that question. Number one, John, I have found that people stall out because they've been hitting the ground so badly and so poorly, and their golf swing is too close to the ground, and they knife the earth. So they stop body rotation so they can then flex their wrists and flex their elbows to pull the golf club back away from the ground, because they've been sticking it in the ground for 25 years and they're sick of it. They don't stall out because they stall out. They stall out for a reason. And if you say hello to the ground enough times, and it doesn't say hello back, it slaps you across the face. You know, it's like a girl. You keep calling her and asking her out on a date, and she keeps telling you no. Eventually, you're going to have to stop calling. If you keep saying hi to the ground, and it doesn't say hi back, eventually you will stop saying hello to the ground. You'll stop trying to hit the ground. You'll become afraid of the ground because you've been told you're too steep, which you're not. You are not too steep. You got too close to the ground. And then you get too close to the ground, you start knifing the earth. You won't do that anymore. And the way to not knife the earth is to stop rotation and pull your elbows in towards your body and bend your wrist angles. That's a great way to not hit the ground. That is a great way to counteract lowering yourself to the ground, is just bend your elbows, kind of pull the grip towards you and bend your wrist angles. Yeah.
So a lot of people would love, audio is not, I think we could all agree, this is not the best format to discuss these topics.
Yes.
But
it's better than nothing, though.
It's better than nothing. Absolutely. I think it's a starting point, right?
Agreed.
I think some people will listen to this and they're like, okay, he's knocked something loose in my brain.
Agree.
So your Instagram handle is Joseph Mayo Golf.
Uh-huh.
And then talk about your Patreon. And I'm not asking people to do something that you think I am, because I'll let Joe talk about it, because it's not what you think it is.
Okay, well, before I get on the Patreon, there was a second answer to your question. You talked about does rotation ever come in? Now, I'm going to say something here, John, that's going to, I mean, you know a lot about the golf swing. This is not going to surprise you, but some
people. Joe, I don't. I'm not an instructor. I just talk about all the other stuff. So I love that you think I know a lot of stuff, but I really don't.
Well, here's what I will say, John. When I teach people to hit these little basic 7-yard chips, 10-yard chips, 20-yard chips, remember when I talked about your arms weighing 30, 35, 40 pounds? Okay. Sure. When I teach you to just move your arms to the right side of your body, to the trail side of your body, that's going to produce more than enough momentum to get the ball from A to B. There is very little body rotation needed to hit a 12-yard chip. There is very little body rotation needed to hit a 20-yard chip shot. Very little. Now, is there some rotation? Of course. But I find, John, I find the opposite, that over-rotation is the problem. I see the high handicapper who over-rotates his hips, which does what to the VSP, Adam?
Flattens it.
Flattens it right off the start. The club head is sucked inside, right? He's sucked inside, and he has almost no chance of ever steeping the VSP correctly and moving the low point forward, and he's going to fat the daylights out of it, and the instructor says, you're too steep. We got to get you shallow. And, buddy, you're in for it. You're in for a heartache and heartbreak. You're in for it. Because he was never too steep. So there's your answer. On these little 10, 12, 15, 20-yard shots, very little rotation is even needed, John. The arms in the club have more than enough momentum to get the ball from A to B. Now, Patreon, thank you for asking about that. And guys, for everybody listening, I have not been on my Patreon in quite some time. I have not left you out to dry. I promise you. There's going to be content coming on Patreon this week. I'm going to set it on fire. We're going to have a lot of good stuff. And the thing about my Patreon channel, I don't keep one penny of it. Not one cent do I keep. Every dime of it goes to Hearts Alive Animal Rescue and Hearts Alive Clinic here in Las Vegas. Obviously, it's an animal clinic that runs as no nonprofit. It's an animal rescue that is saving lives every single day. And for you guys out there that love animals like I do, guys, we have some horrific abuse cases that come in. Things that you don't want to see, things that you never want to hear about. And this money helps save these animals' lives. We had an abuse case come in last week, and I'm not even going to tell you what happened to her because it's ghastly. And the administrator called me and said, we just picked her up 30 minutes ago. And my exact words were, I said, I don't care what it costs. Do not let that animal die because of money. Do not. If I have to give you my Amex, I will. Now, of course, she's the director of Hearts Alive. There was never any thought of letting that animal die, but that was just my instinct to say it. Do not let that animal die because of money. We're going to do everything we can to save her life. And we did. And she's got a foster home. And she's going to have a great rest of her life. But my Patreon, which is it Patreon/TrackmanMaestro, I think it is?
Yes, you've got Trackman Maestro.
Yeah, there you go.
I see you have literally thousands of members. So that's incredible that all that money is being raised. But so for people who want to understand these concepts, I'm sure you have a lot of other stuff. Do we have a lot of videos on this stuff on the Patreon?
A boatload and more are coming. So for all of you Patreon members out there that have been a little bit upset with me because I haven't posted in a while, I promise you it's coming. You're going to love the stuff that I'm going to put out there. And just to repeat myself, I don't keep one penny. Every single cent the channel makes goes to animal charities. And you have my word on that.
Incredible. I remember when you were on Twitter, you were like breaking all the rules. Like you would release a Vimeo, like you were like, hey, I'm going to record this video on this concept. And literally like thousands of golf instructors would be like beating down the door to get this thing from you. Will you ever go back to Twitter, Joe?
No. I can tell you right now, I have friends that are on Twitter and I look at some of the stuff that's on there. I've had people say horrific things about me, horrific things. And I have been critical of people in the past. I have been. And I said some things in the past that I wish I wouldn't have said. I should have done it a different way. But I don't make the personal. I mean, I've had things said about me that are very personal, just awful stuff. And I'm not saying that to play the violin. What I'm saying it for is this. If I were an instructor, and another instructor was coming out with stuff that was kind of controversial, like the steep stuff, and it was kind of an outlier, you know what I wouldn't do? I wouldn't say I am so sick of hearing this steep stuff. This is stupid. I can't believe. What I would do is I'd say, you know what? Let me look at this. I'm going to look at this stuff. I'm going to run this through my memory bank. I'm going to run it by some of my guys that are smart guys, and I'm going to see if this holds water. So when I see certain people, no names being mentioned, say, I'm so sick of hearing steep, I know what I'm dealing with. I know I'm dealing with closed minds. I know I'm dealing with people that are not thinking objectively. They're not thinking critically. They have put themselves in a box. They have marketed themselves into a corner. And they are unwilling to say, maybe there's another way. Maybe there's more to it than this. And as I said again, if I was a young instructor out there and another teacher was willing to put all this stuff out there for free like I've done, I'm going to say, wait a minute, let me look at this. This might be good stuff. I'm going to try it. I wouldn't just discount it and throw it to the wolves, which is what's been done. And the two things that I want people to take from this podcast are, number one, repeating us again, I've never said shallow's bad. I've never said shallow won't work. Sometimes shallow is required. If I'm in the light rough and I'm pitching over a bunker to a tight cut pin, no chance of spin, I got to stop it with landing angle, you can bet your ass. I don't want to be 10, 12 down. I don't want to be. Now, the good thing is if I'm in the light rough, I'm going to lose all my friction. I'm going to lose all my friction. The ball is going to go up. But you can rest assured, I'm going to try to brush the grass. I don't want to have the shaft lean. I don't want to have the down. So the first thing is, as I said, never said shallow is bad ever. I've never said anybody is wrong for teaching shallow. What I have said is steep is not bad. And the second thing that I want out of this, and the people that know who I'm talking, they'll know who I'm talking about. No names. I want to see you come out. I want to see you say, I have learned that shallow is not bad. I was wrong. Steep can be fantastic.
We need to get t-shirts made for this.
I want them to come out and publicly say, I was wrong. Steep is not the enemy that I thought it was. Steep can be mathematically superior at times. Steep does not cause digging. Shaft lean is not only great, it is required to hit these low nippers. That's how you deal off the golf club. That's how you get the dynamic loft down in the mid-40s. Shaft lean. I want to see that. I want to see them be intellectually honest. I want to see them be forthcoming. And I want to see them be better instructors. And I want to better myself as well. I want us all to teach good. I want all of us to teach good. Admit it, that steep can be a great thing.
Well, this is why I connected with you, Joe, so much, because as I said at the start or before this conversation, I've always been a steep player. Like my stock pitch shot is like 10 down, and I've always been fine with pitching. You know, I can take a nice shallow brushing of the grass because my hand path is doing the right things and never suffered. I've had a ton of forward shaft lean. I mean, I look ridiculous at setup. My weight's all on my left side. My shaft is pointing outside of my body, and yeah, I don't dig. So, I put a tweet out in 2017 saying that bounce is overrated, and I just got lambasted in that. So I kind of went into my little shelter, and I'm like, I'm waiting for Joe to come out, and thank God you did with Victor.
Well, just touching on bounce for a second, I'm not going to call his name because I promised him that I wouldn't. A very, very, very famous, well-known, competent wedge maker. I asked him point blank, I said, do you agree that on the shot that I'm teaching people where the club is de-lofted, 14, 15, 16 degrees, VSP, mid-80s, launching the ball at 28, I said, do you think that bounce is useless? And he looked at me and he said, on that shot, bounce is pretty much irrelevant.
Well, you've just removed it completely, right? There's just no way it can be engaged.
Well, let's just say that you have a 60-degree wedge with 6 degrees of bounce, 8 degrees of bounce, which is standard. You know, let's just say that it is. And let's say I've got you on phantom camera at ping, and phantom camera says, well, you lean the shaft 16 degrees on that shot.
It's gone.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what I will say, bounce plays an amazing role in bunkers, in my opinion. Plays an amazing role. But am I saying that balance is irrelevant in all shots? Of course not. I've never said that. But I'm saying on that shot where, we're launching it at 28, 29, 5,000, 6,000 spin, de-lofting it, 15, 17 degrees. Do I think balance is irrelevant? Yes, I do. I absolutely do. One other point I'd like to make is on my channel, you will see Sam Stevens pitching or chipping off of the putting green at TPC Scottsdale. He's launching the ball 27, 28, right? His angle of attack is double digits down. Sam's VSP is 82. And I'm like, there's clearly no bounce being used. I mean, the shaft is leaning 15 degrees. He's steep as all get out. The angle of attack is double digits down. And people are like, well, no, he's using the bounce. I'm like, okay, well, let me change the question. And I want everybody to hear this. If I've got an angle of attack of 14 down, with a shaft lean of, call it 15 degrees, on a VSP of 82 to 85, you can't get steeper than that, Adam. How do you get steeper than 15 lean, 85 VSP, 14 down, right? If that doesn't take the bounce out of play, then what the hell does? Because I asked the question, I says, okay, how the hell do I not use the bounce? Every video I post, my competitors are like, oh, he's using the bounce, he's using the bounce. Okay, how do I not use the bounce? Somebody tell me. The shaft's leaning 15 degrees, your VSP's 90, and your angle of attack's 14 down. How the hell do I not use the bounce? Because here's the thing, guys. If that is still using the bounce, then why do we use the phrase, use the bounce? It's always there. It's like monsters under the bed. How the hell do we get away from bounce? How do we do it? If 14 down doesn't get away from it, if 15 degrees of lean doesn't get away from this bounce, how the hell do we get away from the bounce? Because how many times, guys, listen to me now. How many times have you watched the golf telecast and PGA Tour player John Smith will fat one? What's the first damn thing you hear out of the commentator's mouth? Adam, what is it?
Didn't use the bounce.
He got steep.
Or he got steep. He got steep,
Which he didn't. And he used the leading edge. Okay, well, I've got a player, again, repeating myself for the fifth time, who's 14 down, 15 degrees of shaft lean on an 85 VSP. If that's not steep and using leading edge, I don't know what the hell is.
Man, Joe, you're so lucky you weren't born in like medieval times. You would have been like boiled. You would have been boiled alive like in 20 minutes.
Yes. Drawn and quartered and rolled down a fucking hill.
You are not a man who's existed hundreds of years ago.
Well, I can tell you right now, I've had off the top of my head, there are five golf commentators. And I'm not going to mention their names because, again, I'm not trying to stick a fork in anybody. Five of them that have called me and have asked me, okay, Joe, what do I say on television? Because I tell them to their face, I'm like, listen, on last Thursday, you said John Smith stuck it in the ground because he got steep. He didn't. He didn't get steep. And they all asked me what to say. I'm like, listen, just tell the viewer he just simply got too close to the ground. He just got too close to the ground. And don't say he used the leading edge. Because you can use the leading edge, Adam, as you know, you can use the leading edge and never even bruise the grass.
I do. My way of playing.
But never forget this to all the listeners out there. Never forget this. You can be as steep as you want to be. You can have as much shaft lean as you want to have. And you can have a 90 degree VSP and never even touch the grass. Or you can be as shallow as you want to be. And you can hit 3 inches behind it and bury the hosel in the ground. If that golf swing starts dropping down, if those knees start flexing, if those hips start dropping, if you go into right side tilt for the right-handed golfer and that right shoulder starts dropping, you can absolutely bury the hosel up in the ground and there wasn't one single steep piece to your golf swing. And that is a fact.
You just made like the closing argument. I think when I saw you in Vegas, I said, you either can be like a Southern Baptist like preacher or a trial attorney.
I'm going to be a combination of Jimmy Swaggart and F. Lee Bailey.
We could do a whole other episode on your memorabilia collection. That was one of the things I enjoyed about when you were on Twitter. You used to share all of the, you know, you used to visit places, famous movie scenes from like Shawshank, and I know you collect a lot of memorabilia. It was very cool.
Well, I just got an amazing piece yesterday, John. I've been waiting for this one. It auctioned about 10 years ago, and it finally came back to auction. Shawshank.
Yeah, I see it. I'm looking at it right now. Andy Dufresne's prison shirt.
Yeah, his. Well, he had multiple shirts because if you remember, Andy was in prison for 20 plus years in the movie, so they had to change his outfit. the shirt that I got is the one that he wore in the second half of his prison stint. You remember the scene when he turns on the Victrola and the warden tells him to turn it off? He's playing the
yes,
music?
Yes, of course.
That shirt, I've got that one. And the good thing is that it's screen match, which means we can prove that it was the Warren actually worn in the movie. So,
isn't it a absolute sin that that movie did not win the Academy Award? I just can't like live in a world that that's true. But that's
well,
a
here's
whole
the
separate.
Thing. Not only do you get Best Picture, you've got Andy Dufresne as Best Actor. You've got Morgan Freeman as Best Supporting Actor, in my opinion. I mean, and if you go back and look at I looked at the Google, did you know that movie was a flop, guys? It was terrible at the box office. It was a flop.
It's top five for me, top 10 for sure.
Like, period.
It's one of my best movies. It just gives you such tingles when you watch. When he gets out and he meets Morgan Freeman on the beach, that is, I don't know, one of the best scenes in any movie ever.
Just spoiled it for me.
Adam has never seen anything.
No, I've seen it. I'm joking.
Every time I bring something up, he's like, what is that?
I had the pleasure of visiting Mansfield, Ohio. So I went to the prison, the reformatory where they filmed it, and went to the scenes downtown. So it was great. Unfortunately, the tree that Andy left the note buried under, that tree was damaged badly by a lightning storm. So the tree is no longer there. One of my favorite places to visit as far as filming locations, if you remember when Morgan Freeman is riding in the back of the truck and they drop him out and he's walking down the road to quote unquote Buxton.
Hmm.
Yeah. I've been there to that scene and that farmhouse in the distance. That's really a great place. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful movie.
It was. That's a very cool hobby to have, to seek out famous film location scenes. I would have never thought about that.
It's good stuff.
Well, Joe, we're at our time. We usually like to keep our prisoners here for about an hour and a half. You've been incredibly gracious with your time. And I think you've given a lot of people a lot to think about. And I do want to encourage people to check out if you're an Instagram user, just go check out josephmayogolf.com. I'll put it on the show notes because I just want people to see videos of this. I think it's fascinating. And again, your Patreon is linked there. You're not trying to sell something for personal gain, which is kind of nice and refreshing. So it's cool that it's for charity.
I don't keep one penny.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
So yeah, is that where you want to, I'm assuming that seems like your only public internet property anymore. So is that the only place to go?
I don't do Twitter. I don't do any internet golf forums. No. I actually don't do a good job of it. There is no josephmayo.com. There is no website.
There's nothing. You're a ghost. I love
it. I don't do the best job of marketing myself. I'm kind of a loner when it comes to that. But and actually I kind of feel like a hypocrite for doing this podcast because I've had so many people asked me to do a podcast. And when you publicly stated on Twitter a few days ago, you said, we finally got him. I got a couple of hot little texts coming into my phone. Wow. Okay. Because, you know, they asked me to do their podcast and I told them no. And the reason I'm doing this one is, you know, Adam is a personal friend of mine. He lives here in Vegas, as I do. I knew that we would get down to the nitty gritty and I knew that we would talk about the technical stuff and it wouldn't be just fluff and pitter patter. But you know, for everybody listening, I'll end with this again. Guys, I know I'm repeating myself. Please look at Steep a different way. Open your mind. Think about it. And again, if your hypothesis is Steep is bad and it causes digging and shuffling is bad, hop over to my channel. Look at countless players, tour players and amateurs that are as steep as you can get with all the shuffling you can handle. And they're barely touching the ground. As a matter of fact, guys, I've got one that I posted a few weeks ago. His angle of attack was double digits down, shaft leaning double digits forward off of a tight lie. And the bounce on the wedge was how much, Adam? Zero.
I didn't see this one. Zero. I know you did that with Hovland as well, right? You took off some of the bounce.
I did not tell them to do that. That was between Victor and Ping. But yes, Victor went down and bounced. But my friends at Ping made me a wedge with 0 degrees of bounce. There is none there. And this guy's launching these chip shots at 26, 27 at 12 degrees down off of a tight lie. And I flipped the wedge upside down and I said, guys, there's no bounce on this wedge. There's no bounce to engage. So when you see that, when you see someone that steep, that down with 0 degrees of bounce on the wedge, you can no longer continue to say that steep causes digging, that shaftling is causing. You can't say that. You cannot continue with that hypothesis. And I'm going to leave it at that.
I rest my case, Your Honor.
Thank you. The prosecution rests.
The prosecution rests.
Guys, thank you for having me. My pleasure.
You might be the defense, actually, but
yes, I'm just right there.
Adam, we'll close it out. Adam, where can everyone find your stuff?
AdamYoungGolf.com. Next Level Golf would be the product where I got my short game stuff. But John, where can people find you?
You can check out The Four Foundations of Golf and now The Foundations of Winning Golf, both available on Amazon. Joe, thank you so much. That was awesome. Thank you, everyone. Sorry we didn't get to everyone's questions, but we always appreciate them. And everyone who tunes in, we'll see you next time with a new episode.